Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's Roundup. No special announcements or anything, so let's jump right in. First up, earlier this month, a 290-page full-color coffee table book about the Sega Saturn was released on Amazon. It's in stock and available to purchase right now. I got mine, and it was pretty neat. I was able to flip through and just see a bunch of different screenshots and pictures of different accessories. Some of the pictures had a Sony PVM in the background, which I always appreciate to see. But this was just exactly what you would expect when somebody uses the phrase coffee table book. I'm not sure if anybody under 40 would know what that is, but to my fellow old people, you all understand what I'm talking about. And it's just kind of a cool thing if you're a fan of the Saturn. The price is about $45, but I got mine on sale for $35. I think the links in the description in Dan's post go directly to the Amazon page, so I'm not sure if it's still on sale or not. But even if it was the original $44 price, I think if you're a fan of the Saturn and you just want something fun to have around your house or office or game room or whatever, where people who know what the Saturn is could pick it up and flip through and kind of get a really neat window into history, I would definitely recommend it. You know, if you're not into that stuff, though, obviously, then this isn't going to be any different. But I strongly recommend checking out Dan's post. And also, just a shout out, this post came in after I had finished recording the podcast last week, which is why you might see the date was Tuesday, even though the podcast is Wednesday and it wasn't included. So that's never, ever intentional. It's just one of those things where scheduling like that happens. So no disrespect to any of the contributors, including myself, when I end up doing that to myself. But I just wanted to let everybody know. I never miss a post. I certainly don't do it on purpose. I don't think I've ever actually missed one though. So if you ever see something on the site on, you know, Tuesday afternoon or evening, it'll be in the following week's podcast. Whew, I'm sharp today. Starting off strong. Let's see if this podcast can get any better. Sorry. Next up, the VM2 now supports per game virtual memory units if you're using Open Menu via the GDMU. If you already know what all of those things are, please just check out Derek's post and accompanying video to show you how to use it and basically give you a full overview. But if you don't know what any or some of those things are, I'll walk you through it. First of all, the VM2 is a replacement virtual memory unit that was recently released that is a very big upgrade from the original with a better screen, much better battery life, and offers a ton of different things, including virtual memory cards. But at the moment, up until this release, it wasn't able to have virtual memory cards automatically set per game. You would have to make those yourself, and you would have to manually select them before loading. So the problem that it's run into is with original discs, I'm not sure it's ever possible to have auto-detecting of games with virtual memory cards auto-selected between each of them. However, it was always stated that if ODE manufacturers are able to put this code into their ODEs, it would work. So the Open Menu software, which was originally written by Hayden Kowalczyk and now under development by the legendary Megavolt 85, who did the Atomos Wave conversions, if you're using a GDMU and that Open Menu software, obviously on the latest versions, then you should be able to have this feature built in. I'd like to see this come to any of the other Dreamcast ODEs that are out there as well. And it's just something that's kind of a, it's something we've gotten used to with modern things, with the modern memory cards, like the Memcard Pros and all of that stuff. And I think it's just one of those upgrades that's so seamless that you forget you have it until you don't. So having this added to the VM2 is very awesome. I believe this was created by Chris Daigolu. I'm positive I pronounced that wrong. My apologies. So basically, if you want more info on this, check out Derek's post and video. And it's exciting to see this project move along. And it's pretty cool to see how the Dreamcast could kind of seamlessly integrate with ODEs and saves now. So hopefully we'll see more progress with this. Pre-orders are now open for a plug-and-play Bluetooth receiver for the Sega Dreamcast. So this is a small dongle-style Bluetooth receiver that's based off of Blue Retro, which is just about the lowest latency Bluetooth receivers you could get. And it's as easy as all of the other Blue Retro devices. You plug it into your Dreamcast, you hold down a button to sync to any of your controllers, and that's it. If you're using something like a PlayStation 5 DualSense controller, you could have less than 6 milliseconds of average latency, which is awesome. That's even fine for fighting games all the way up to pro-level competition. I'm not sure where that stands in the Dreamcast with pro-level stuff, but certainly it's good enough for me. You know, provided everything else is low latency. If you have a very laggy flat panel display plus one of these, all that stuff starts to add up. But if you're playing on a CRT or a very fast gaming monitor, I don't think most people would notice this. The price is about $30 plus shipping, and they should start to arrive to customers in about early July. You could pre-order them from US or Europe stores. And I had a couple of recommendations for people just to think about for controllers to pair with it. Anything that's compatible with Blue Retro would work, and PlayStation 5 DualSense controllers are really my go-to with Blue Retro, but the Retro Fighters Defender might actually be a pretty decent choice. But also, depending on the game you're trying to play, maybe even the Neo Geo Mini Bluetooth controller? I don't know, that's going to be completely up to you, but because the Dreamcast has such a wide variety of games on it, I just figured I would add that paragraph in at the end just to give people a little out-of-the-box way to approach it. But basically, if it's a controller that's compatible with Blue Retro, it'll be compatible with this and should work fine with your Dreamcast. So I'm looking forward to trying it out and see how it works, but links to everything are right here in the post. An emulator is now officially available for iOS devices called Delta, and this supports emulation of the NES, SNES, N64, all of the Game Boys, and the Nintendo DS. The developers Riley Testa and Shane Gill have officially released it, and apparently there was another emulator released a couple of weeks ago that was a ripoff of this one. They get pulled from the App Store for having, uncompliant in-game ads or something like that. I'm not sure if that's true. I read that. I actually don't even remember where I read that. So I just know that this is the official emulator that you would expect from a group of people who have been working on stuff like this for a while, including the same group that had done some sideloading versions of this. And I tried it out, and I thought it was awesome. I think you just need to put it into context. This is not going to replace your analog pocket. No chance that's going to do that. But for a completely free emulator where all you have to do is basically use Dropbox or whatever you got to save your ROMs to your phone, then why wouldn't you just give it a try if you're into stuff like this? I have zero complaints about it. It would be fun to lag test it someday just for the hell of it, just to see. But I appreciate things like this for what they are. This is a fun way to play your games on your phone for free in a very easy manner. So I love it from that perspective. I have used stuff like this to play through some games before a long time ago in the past, and it was fun, but it definitely wasn't the same as using a controller. I am also curious to see if the team is willing to port this to the Apple TV, because I think that would be a very cool place to see some emulation for game or consoles like the Nintendo 64 especially, or maybe even something like the Nintendo DS, where you use your TV as the main screen and your phone as the other. I would certainly be willing to pay for that, as long as the latency was within reason, of course. But I think that's pretty cool. So, if you're interested in this, check out Andrew's post. The link to the emulator's in there. There's some more info on it and stuff like that. But overall, I love emulation, and I especially love it for stuff like this. A free emulator that works very well with some cool skins for it that just works, and you could play some games on the go. So to all the people who said iOS emulation would never happen and I was full of shit for mentioning it on the podcast, download Delta. You'll be pleasantly surprised. And I'll be waiting for that apology that's definitely never coming. Wizzo just released a Tap To app for iOS and Android devices, and I think this is an absolutely awesome free tool for anybody who's into the NFC Mister stuff. And there's even a paid function that might save you money and allow you to try this stuff out for a very cheap price. So give me a minute to walk through it, but I really think this is one of those apps that every Mister user should at least think about. So first, Tap To is software that works with an NFC reader that allows you to program NFC cards to launch games on your Mister. I always thought that was cool until I tried it myself, and then I realized it's not cool, it's freaking awesome. It's a tactile way to launch your games. And while it's not the same as sticking your cartridge into your original console, it's neat. It's very cool. And there's some stickers available that you could purchase that really make it an awesome experience. However, not everybody might want to hunt down or build an NFC reader, and even if you do, depending on your workflow, programming those cards might not be as easy as you would have hoped. So this app will work on any phone that supports NFC, which is most modern phones. I didn't even realize that my iPhone mini had that capability until I downloaded this app. But the free functions allow you to program the cards right from your phone. As long as you're connected to the same network as your Mister and your Mister's powered on, you can just do it that way. It'll also allow you to read them so that you could see what each card is programmed to, which is great if you've programmed some cards before you put stickers on them. And if you use an NFC reader connected to your Mister and you tap and load it, if you have your app open, it'll automatically tell you the exact file path of the game that you're loading, which is super helpful for anybody who uses RetroNAS, because maybe you programmed the wrong version of the ROM or something like that, and or maybe you just have a ton of ROMs on your Mister and you want to make sure you're using the right one. So all of those functionalities, I think, are awesome. They're all completely free. And then if you spend about $4 in-app, it could turn your phone into the reader that launches the games. So that means you could spend like $6 on a pack of NFC cards from Amazon, buy this app, program the cards with this, and then launch your games this way to see if it's something that you'd be interested in. I'm not sure if this is going to be everybody's preferred method of launching games, but I am sure that if you were on the fence about, is this something I even want, trying this out would at least give you a feel of what it's like. Now, of course, you need to have your Mister powered up, connected to the network, and your phone connected to it, but that's not too hard to do, and it'll at least give you a sense of what all of this is like. So I think it's absolutely awesome. I wrote a very quick how-to guide in the post here, so if anybody wants to try it out, just read through the post. Links for absolutely everything are in it. And Wizzo posted a video that showed this thing in action to give you even more of a sense of what to expect. But really, if you're into NFC stuff at all for your Mister, download the free app and see if you're going to use it just as a tool for your NFCs, or you might even just use the paid function and have that be the way that you launch these games. But either way, check out the post, and thanks to Wizzo for continuing to make all of this awesome stuff and to release a ton of it for free. I mean, having an in-app purchase for a function that not everybody might want is perfect, at least in my opinion. Feel free to disagree. The only other quick thing to note, if you're a Patreon supporter of Wizzo, just reach out and he'll give you a coupon so you don't have to pay for it, which I think is pretty awesome. So, yep, check out the post for more info.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I just reviewed an HDMI 4x2 matrix switch that supports up to 4K 120. Now, the price came in just under $200, so this really is a piece of equipment that is meant for people who need 4K 120, either now or in the short-term future, because if you wanted just a 4K 60 compatible switch, you could get much cheaper matrix switches out there. So I'll walk through this mini review for you, but I definitely wanted to start out with full transparency in that if you don't care about 4K 120, you should skip to the next section. If you do, definitely stick with me. So first up, I'll start with a good. There were no dropouts at all when I was watching content. Dolby Atmos content, regular, normal stereo audio, video games, movies, whatever, the Switch did not drop out at all, which is cool because a ton of HDMI switches and splitters that I've used over the years, you'll be watching a TV show and you won't touch any of your equipment and all the signal will drop off for a couple seconds and then come back for no reason whatsoever. That's a very common problem, and this Switch did not do that once in my testing. Also, I don't have the ability to test 4K 120. I don't have a TV or video game console that could do that. But my friend Beast was the one who recommended this Switch, and he does use it for that exact reason and has been using it for a while now, months, I think. And he doesn't have dropouts even with 4K 120. So thanks, Beast, for both the recommendation and for confirming multiple times that, sorry for annoying you for that. Also, because it's a matrix switch, that essentially means you could use it either as a splitter or as two HDMI switches at the same time. Because matrix switches allow you to do something like route input 1 through output 2 and input 4 through output 1 or something like that. So, or of course, you could just put input 2 out to output 1 and 2. Now, the other good things about it was it worked with ARC. So there's an ARC port, audio return channel, and I was able to connect that to my receiver and control the volume the same way you normally would with your streaming box remote or something like that. So ARC is always finicky. It's cool to see that work. And it also worked with both the RetroTINK 4K's inputs and outputs, which is great because there's a lot of lower quality equipment that doesn't seem to be compatible with the TINK 4K. And I have a feeling it's kind of the cheaper components and cheaper chipsets that they're using, but this does not have that problem. I was able to run things in and out of it. So that's all the good. I think there's a lot of stuff in there that would probably make people want to buy that, especially if you have a mix of consoles of new and old. Some you might want to route through the TINK 4K. Some you want to just go directly to your TV. I think this might be the perfect setup. However, there's a few negative things. First, it's not PS3 compatible. So if you want to use PlayStation 3, you'll still need to use some kind of HDCP stripper, which is a pain because I use my streaming box through my RetroTINK 4K all the time just for adding scan lines or BFI or whatever other things that I want to do for older content that's on the streaming services. So kind of stinks that that's not built in. Obviously, you would understand why that's not built in, but I would love to see a version of that with this. Also, there's no Dolby Atmos EDID emulation, which is a big problem for people like me who have a 2016 OLED that does not support Dolby Atmos audio, but a receiver that does. Using something like this, I should be able to just use output 2 directly to the receiver and output 1 to my TV in order to get around that issue, but I would also need to buy an EDID emulator around with it, which is cheap. They're like $20. They're super easy to set up. You basically just plug everything into your setup. You hold the button down to copy or EDID, and then you plug that into the Switch and you're done. But for under $200, I would have liked to have seen something like that built in, and I don't really get why. Now, this next thing may or may not be a negative or positive. It doesn't pass CEC control. So if you have your system set up where if you press the power button on one thing, your TV and your receiver all come up at the same time, and same thing with powering off, this will not work. But some people prefer that. Some people like to have CEC cut off, and there's even CEC removal devices for this exact reason. So I understand, this could go either way. Also, I will be completely honest with you, I didn't even bother testing the audio extraction. I know that's pure laziness on my part, but I personally can't see a scenario in which I'm running 4K 120 devices through this Switch and then getting left and right stereo audio or SPDIF audio out, because those don't support the more modern audio formats, so maybe it's designed for people that just want a cheap and basic stereo audio out. Maybe if you're a streamer, you would just pipe the left and right audio through if it's activated through whatever game that you have. I'm not really sure, but generally speaking, optical outputs of these switches work totally fine with barely any change, if not zero change to the signal at all. And analog outputs on these, analog audio outputs, range from absolutely terrible to meh. You know, they're one of the HDMI splitters I always recommend. I was very impressed with the quality of it for the money. You would never compare this to a standalone DAC, but if you compared it to, or if you took into consideration the fact that it's a feature built into a device that you're using for other things, it was very cool. I expect this to fall into the same category. Maybe it's going to be terrible. Maybe it's going to be perfectly meh. But I personally just don't see a use for that in my setup when I'm also integrating 4K 120. But please let me know in the comments. Did I screw up? Should I really have spent the hours to MD Fourier test the analog and SPDIF output of this thing? If so, let me know. I'll either retest this one or make sure to continue to do it in the future. But for me, all I cared about was HDMI matrix switching. I didn't really need any other features except for the ones that I just talked about. So if you want more info, the post is basically a written version of what I just said, but pictures, links, and everything else are in there. And maybe this is the perfect switch for you, maybe not, but I don't know. Let me know. Let me know what you think. I'll try to review a few more of these, but I want to wait to make sure that they're decent quality, because it would be very easy for me to drop a couple of grand and not like any of the switches. So I'm going to be a little careful on how I spend my money on these, but I think this one was overall pretty cool. So let me know what you think. Next up, Derek Pescarilla just released a full English translation patch for the Sega Saturn game Jung Rhythm. And this is a game that's been compared to Parappa the Rapper for a lot of its similarities. And it's kind of a music rhythm-based game. And it's definitely one of those games that you would want an English, or probably need an English translation to play. So it's very cool to see Saturn fans who are into this type of game get essentially a brand new game, because unless you were able to read and hear and understand Japanese, then this game would not have been playable for you. The only thing to note, just follow the readme and just kind of skim through it for information for first-time players, because you'll definitely want to understand how exactly to approach this game. And if you want to support Derek for doing these, head over to dreamcastforever.com and click on contact for the PayPal donation link. And I'm obviously a massive fan of these English translations. I just think that there are so many games out there that people who don't speak Japanese would have loved to experience but just didn't have the ability to. So I love seeing it happen. So thanks again, Derek, for always doing these. And if you have the ability to play Saturn backup games, then definitely check this one out and see what you think. Now it's time for this week's Mr. Updates, care of Lou from Lou's Retro Source. As usual, I'm going to skim through these and just give my thoughts when I feel like it. But if you want visual examples and more details, please check out Lou's video. First up, there's now a way to filter out one of the two Genesis cores using Downloader INI if you prefer to only have one of them. So basically, there's a Genesis core and a Mega Drive core. And the Mega Drive one is slightly more accurate, but it doesn't have things like direct video. So if you're using direct video, you probably wouldn't even want the option to run the Mega Drive core so you don't accidentally click on it and to get no video at all. I actually hope that's added pretty soon, because that was a pretty big loss, because I use direct video most of the time for a lot of the stuff that I do. But anyway, next up, the Saturn core has had another update that affects a bunch of different games. So as always, thanks to SRG320. There is now an OPL3 implementation for the 486 that's based on the work of Greg Taylor. You could try this new implementation by downloading an unstable build of the core if you'd like, and Lou posted more info in the video about exactly what this might do. So if you're a user of the 486 core, definitely check into this one. Next, Hans has received a new version, a new revision of the prototype Mistex baseboard, which has an additional trace and will allow updating the RP2040 firmware right from the HPS Linux system. So I love to see this project move along. It's basically a fork of Mister that still uses Mister, but allows it to be applied to different pieces of hardware, starting with this new base hardware that Hans has been working on. So I'm a huge fan of this, and I'm really looking forward to seeing where this progresses, because this could still support all of the awesome work that's been done on Mister and all of the developers, but just allow us end users to have more choices for hardware, including more powerful hardware, which would be nice. Next, Hotego's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle core is now available to the public, and Hodego also released some new shooters to the beta testers, Patreon subscribers, including some vertical shooters. So if you're like me and you flipped a CRT on its side and want to try out some more games for it, if you're supporting Hodego, you could do that right now. And if not, just you have to wait till whenever they become public. Next, Anton Gale's Exidy Universal Game Board 2 Core has been updated to support high score saves. So update that if you want to make sure that your saves are saved. And lastly, Martin Donlan, a.k.a. Wicker Waka, just plans to release a bunch of cores based on the IRM 590 and M107 and posted a list of to-do things that that Martin planned on working on. So very cool to see Martin's work continue. Obviously, R-Type came out great, and I'm looking to see a bunch more. We're looking forward to seeing a bunch more come out of these different cores. So thanks to Martin. And, of course, thanks to Lou for keeping up with all of this stuff. I would never be able to without him. So please subscribe to Lou's channel as well. And as always, just thanks to everybody who contributes to Mister. This is very cool to see this stuff progress. Next up, the developer Infidelity has just publicly released his latest NES to SNES conversion, this time for Contra. And as with the previous versions, they eliminate slowdown, reduce sprite flicker, and allow for some SNES-related enhancements, like the MSU1 stuff that's not possible on NES hardware. This is interesting because this actually uses the Konami VRC2 mapper, which is the first time Infidelity has been able to port this over to the SNES, and at first, he wasn't even sure if it was possible at all. This is also a port of the Famicom version of the game, which apparently is superior to the NES version. I actually have never tried the Famicom version, and I plan on doing a live stream as soon as I can. I'm actually recording these very early on Monday, late afternoon, just so I could try to free up some time to do things like live stream this. So who knows? Maybe this post, by the time you read it, will have a live stream embedded in it, or maybe it's just me word vomiting about it. But either way, if you're a fan of Contra, then obviously give this a try. The game is absolutely iconic. Anybody who grew up in that era had to have at least played it once, and it's very cool to see it potentially get a bunch more enhancements. I say potentially because I haven't played it yet, but all of the other NES to SNES conversions I've played have had some very noticeable differences. The slowdown was pretty huge, but also the sprite flicker, depending on the game, could be massive. So I'm looking forward to seeing how it performs. Hopefully I would have already live streamed it by the time you're hearing this, but if not, it's already a public release, so feel free to download it right from the links in the post. But please consider supporting the developer on Patreon as well, because I'd love to see more of these amazing conversions done, and obviously the only way we could do that is by supporting. So thanks very much to the developer Infidelity, and I can't wait to try this out. Joe from GameSack recently released a video showcasing every single game on the original PlayStation that supports a native widescreen mode. Not stretching your game to fill 16:9, but actually a native mode. And the one thing that you really need to know about these, Joe covered right at the beginning of the video, in that it's still the same resolution, just stretched to fill properly a 16:9 screen. So Joe's visual examples are better than what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. Imagine a 640x480 pixel image in a square format. If that is switched to 16:9, if it's properly done like some of the games in this video, then it won't be stretched. The aspect ratio will still be the same. It'll just be drawing the entire 16:9, but with the same 640 pixel width, which means you get less sharpness and less detail if you're playing it in widescreen mode. I've messed with Dreamcast and Saturn games this way, and it was hit or miss. Some I thought were absolutely worth doing it in 16:9, but for whatever reason, maybe it's just because I like the game a lot, Outrun for PlayStation 2, I still prefer in 4:3. I think that extra detail makes a big difference. But there's no right or wrong way to do that. It's what your eyes prefer, and it could be game-specific. So Joe already shows that in the video, but I just wanted to be very clear to my fellow nerds about that to know what to expect. But the video was kind of fascinating because there were a ton of games that's widescreen mode was just broken, like not even close to working. And Joe speculated, which I tend to agree with, maybe it was something like Sony actually had some bad info in their SDKs about how to implement widescreen mode, and if developers wanted to add it but didn't actually have widescreen monitors to test it on, maybe that's why they ended up like that. But I don't know. Some games came out perfect, and some absolutely didn't. And some were odd. Some were like a 14:9 mode instead of a 16:9 or something. So I would absolutely watch the video. My only regret is I should have been taking notes, because I think a cool wiki post would be which of the original PlayStation games are worth playing in widescreen, and if they are, can you do it on a 16:9 CRT? Because like many of us own, especially HD CRTs, this might be a pretty cool use for it. Or is it something that you could really only take advantage of with something like a RetroTINK 4K, where you could do the auto stretching horizontally or vertically depending on the game, and kind of make it work like that? But without it, maybe it wouldn't really work that way. I don't know, but I would highly recommend the video. Joe said he's going to do this type of video with other consoles as well, so I'm looking forward to watching all of these, because I was really shocked when I found out that PlayStation 1 and Saturn games, some had widescreen modes, because I didn't know that they were actually widescreen TVs back then. Maybe they were in Japan and Europe, but I certainly didn't start seeing those in the US till the late 90s. And even so, it started out in very expensive, very high-end AV places. Certainly wasn't in like a Circuit City or something like that. They eventually were, of course, but I just mean not in 94 or 95 type of thing. But either way, I recommend the video. To be honest, even if you really don't care about playing your games in widescreen and you have a 4x3 CRT that you love, still an interesting video. So give it a watch if you're interested, and maybe I could swing back around to doing an entry on the wiki about which games are which based on this. So hopefully I'll find time. Well, that's it for this time. Sorry I have another cold, end of spring allergies. I don't know what the hell I have, but yeah, I guess I'm a bit nasally. I just recording on-screen footage for a video that's coming up soon, and I ended up using this camera because it's not as sharp as the GH5, because my eyes were all puffy and watery, and I wanted to look less crappy than I probably did in person. So hopefully I waited long enough to be able to do this till my throat sort of came back. But yeah, it is what it is. I've actually never had allergies till like 2019. And I don't know why, but then I started getting them and stuff like this happens. So it's embarrassing and it's very annoying, but I guess there's nothing you could do about it. Otherwise, millions of people wouldn't be suffering through allergies every year. But my apologies for my nasaliness, or if there were any dropouts or cuts in the video while I had to turn to cough or something. But anyway, as always, thank you to everybody who watches, listens, plays nicely in the comments, and especially thank you to anybody who supports in any way possible, because it really is you who's keeping all of this stuff going. So thank you all so much, and I'll see you next week.
This week's roundup is brought to you by Neo Paradigm Entertainment, connecting Southeast Asian influencers with opportunities in the West.